Up next, Pulitzer Prize-winning humorist Dave Barry and Alan Zwiebel, winner of the Thurber Prize for American Humor, talk about teaming up to write Lunatics, a novel about two men whose lives collide and are forced to face a world full of jerks and morons. Then later on, we will be talking with our gurus of how-to, Alvin and Larry Ubell. They'll be here to take your calls and questions about home repair. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We're also available as a podcast, and you can find me on Facebook and Twitter.
WNYC support comes from David Henry Hwang's Chinglish, the new Broadway comedy about getting lost in translation. Tickets at telecharge.com. Asia Society presenting the lecture Assessing the Impact of U.S. Debt to China, Thursday, January 12th at 6:30, part of an ongoing series at the Asia Society Museum, 212-288-6400, asiasociety.org/emerging markets. WNYC is a media sponsor of the 2012 New York Guitar Festival, now through January 29th, featuring concerts, multimedia works, and an all-day marathon open to the public. Details at newyorkguitarfestival.org.
Last March, the world held its breath as Japan struggled to survive the effects of a devastating earthquake. Join us in the Green Space for a look at Japan today through conversation and performance with authors Ian Baruma and Roland Keltz, jazz pianist Keiko Matsui, and pop singer Akiko Yano. Presented with Penn World Voices Festival, Thursday, January 19th. Tickets at WNYC.org/thegreenspace.
Lunatics is the title of a new novel, but it could also serve as a description of a lot of the work of its two authors because it's a collaboration between Dave Barry and Alan Zwiebel. It begins when the referee at a kids' soccer championship calls offsides and the father of the child who would otherwise have kicked the winning goal disagrees. Now, conflicts that begin at children's sports games are notorious for spiraling out of control, but this one careens through a terrorist attack on the George Washington Bridge, then onto a clothing-optional cruise, and from there to a rebellion in Cuba, a Somali pirating episode, and then, well, don't ask. You'll just have to read the book. It is published by Putnam, and I'm very pleased that it brings Dave Barry and Alan Zwiebel back to our show. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So whose idea was this, and what made you think that the two of you could work well together?
What makes you think we do work well together?
That's quite an assumption.
No, this was actually – it really was Alan's idea. He and I met a while ago, and we've known each other for a few years. We get along, sort of, you know, and he kept saying to me, we should do something. We should do –
Did you think you had similar senses of humor? Is that why?
Yes and no. We appreciated each other's senses of humor, but they're not exactly the same. So I thought that, okay, our two voices might make a good combination.
Well, the both of you have done a lot of collaborating over the years. Dave, you've written a bunch of books with different people. And Alan, wrote comedy for Saturday Night Live, for Gary Shandling, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Monk. All in a collaborative
700
situation.
Sundays for Billy Crystal was also a collaboration, and it's social and it's fun. There's something synergistic about a couple of people doing something together.
Although we didn't do it together. I would stress that. He lives in New Jersey and I live in Miami, so we did it almost all by email. We met a couple of times, and you would think that, you know, we're in the middle of writing this book, and there are issues to be resolved in a book, like what in the world is this book? Where is it going? What is the plot of this book? These questions we had not even begun to address, and we would meet. We met twice, once in New York and once down in Miami. And you would think that we would, you know, the two authors trying to write this book, which had all these unresolved issues, would discuss these issues, and instead...
We spoke about everything. We spoke the NBA playoffs.
We had a couple of drinks, is my recollection.
Well, we had a couple of drinks, but my guess is even if we had no drinks whatsoever, the word plot would not have come up until coffee the way it did with the drinks.
Well, I got the feeling that you wrote this book the way people tell a collective story around a campfire, where each person advances the plot to a cliffhanger and then turns it over to the next person.
Absolutely.
That's correct. That was our process. It was very much a revenge-oriented process of writing. It's, oh, you're going to do that to me, huh? Well, now you deal with this, Mr. Funny Guy.
It was like communicating with Ted Kaczynski. I would get something in my inbox, the email. I go, uh-oh, what did he do with what I just sent him? And I'd open it and I go, oh, God, oh, God. And it would take a day or so for me to just let it sink in and go, oh, yeah, I'll show him. And it went back and forth like that for 6 months or so.
Well, Ted Kaczynski is in jail right now.
But he was, nevertheless, he's very accessible and he's quite helpful.
And he wrote a good portion of this, by the way.
We turned to him a number of times for support.
So did you have to every once in a while negotiate the other one's contribution? Or did you just simply say, okay, he did it to me. Now I'm just going to have to get back at him.
A couple of times I became what we came to refer to as the plot Nazi. And I'm really not famous for being, you know, type A about, you know, reality. But I'd say, Alan, you know, in the previous chapter, your character was a middle-aged Jewish man from New Jersey. And now suddenly he's an elderly Belgian woman. I think we need to.
It was the continuity thing. He was my character has two children. And at one point they had five names. OK, so, yeah, we had to do a little tweaking.
Do either of you have kids who play sports?
I'm the father of three children. All three of them went through soccer leagues. And I made the fatal mistake 1 year of becoming the commissioner of our son's Little League. And we became the most hated people in town. So I'm very familiar with what, you know, overzealous parents of children who play sports are like.
And I have two kids. My son played soccer. My daughter is 11. She plays very actively in club soccer in Miami. And I have seen unbelievable parent behavior. I've seen fights routinely on the side.
Yeah, well, you have to wonder what kinds of role models parents are when they get more emotionally involved in the game than their kids.
Now, the kids are in this field turning around watching their parents going, what are you doing?
Yeah, the kids are going, you know, this is not that important. And the parents are going nuts.
This is true. With the girls, like, the game ends and, like, sometimes, you know, we're over there just fuming. And the girls, like, in 10 seconds, they're hugging, they're kissing, they're fine. You know, they're talking about their hair. You know, they're over it.
This is a story of extreme plot swings, as we've pointed out. But one of my producers, a soccer mom, says that she found it hard to believe that any normal man would continue to ref kids' soccer games after his child no longer played.
You know something? That's an excellent point. Probably because they're subjected to that kind of abuse, and why put yourself in that position?
It's one of the most dangerous of all professions.
Absolutely. He might as well be a matador, you know, for that reason.
Some of the things here, Cuban counter-revolution.
We pay our refs in Miami nearly $12 a game.
So, wow.
That's why they're
fine.
Doing it.
No.
So we have this book with alternating chapters. Alan, the character from whose point of view when he is in a Belgian woman, is Philip Horkman.
Yes.
What does he do?
Well, Philip Horkman is a very by-the-rules, straight-laced guy, doesn't really take chances with his life, and he is a pet shop owner. He owns a pet store.
Named?
The Wine Shop.
Why the Wine Shop?
And it happened that way. I know it sounds a little, but what happened was he needed money. When he first opened his place, he went to his in-laws, whose last name is Wine, and they said, we'll give you the money if you put our name in the title. So he's got a pet store called The Wine Shop.
And he continues to ref soccer games.
And past, you know, his kids are long gone from being of age to play in the soccer league, but he continues to ref soccer games. It gets him out from behind the cages of the pet store and out in the fresh air and, you know, probably out of the house as well. So that's what he does.
My guests are Alan Zweibel and Dave Barry, who have collaborated on a novel called Lunatics, and it is published by Putnam. Dave, your character is, I'm sure you gave him the name, Jeffrey Peckerman.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. That's his name.
He's not based on you because he's a real jerk.
he's the complete opposite. Whereas Alan Zweibel's character is a lot like Alan Zweibel. He's just a nice, sweet, lovable bear of a man. And my guy is an unbelievable jerk. So it's quite a stretch for me to write this.
Does it give you? Does that give you a certain freedom?
Yes, that was one of the one. My guy is. I mean, I should stress to anybody listening that this is not a book you would want a child to read. My guy does not use appropriate language. He's just a real jerk. He's a kind of a frustrated person. He's a forensic plumber.
What is there such a profession?
Oh, come on now.
I just learned that's real.
No, it's a real. That's a real profession. When there's a crime involving plumbing, forensic plumbers come in and testify for the prosecution and defense to show that it either could or could not have been involved. You know, that particular commode could not have possibly involved in this particular murder by facial suction. You know, that really happens. I actually did a very little, but some research on forensic. Anyway, he's a forensic plumber. Nobody really appreciates what he does or how good he is at it, and. He's just a nasty, he's an idiot. And he remains an idiot all the way through the book and never learns anything.
It's good to be consistent. But you said you only did a little bit of research, but you're all over the place here. You must have done research on Guantanamo, on
We did.
Cuba,
yeah. Yeah, I think Wikipedia was a big help. You know, when we got to Somalia, I learned that they were very hungry there. So.
Or when things like when Alan would have people on a boat get somehow from New York to the Horn of Africa in one day. I would say, I don't think that could really happen. That kind of research we did do.
Oh, yeah. No. And he was a real stickler for, how fast vessels were moving. So I couldn't.
But what happened, these two guys, because they have absolutely nothing in common. They hate each other, but they get thrown together and they can't get away from each other. And things keep happening to them because of who they are that have absolutely, they're completely out of their control and they're usually not even aware that they're happening. But they get more and more and more and more prominent, internationally prominent, without ever realizing this is happening.
In fact, that plays an important role in the events that follow their being captured by the Somali pirates, who have seen them on Jon Stewart's Daily Show.
Yeah, indeed.
They're huge hits on the Daily Show. They have millions of followers on Twitter, and they don't know this.
This is all unbeknownst to them. They have no idea that Brian Williams has been talking about them every night. And
there are T-shirts made in with their images.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought up Brian Williams, because I want to talk a bit about product placement and celebrities who appear in the book. What is Charo doing these days? And last time I saw her, she was on Dancing with the Stars a couple of years ago. Is she really appearing on cruises?
Yes, Charo. Well, I wrote the chapter where Charo first appears when they inadvertently, our guys, hijack a cruise ship, a clothing optional cruise ship. They don't know.
Clothing optional, I would think, came from Alan. Because
Absolutely. Your
last time you were here, you talked about a book.
That was the name
the
of
title,
my book.
Clothing
it
optional.
Was the title story
This is
the of
thing
a
about you, Alan.
Well, you know something? I reached, write what you know. Write what you feel. And I'm going, okay. No, I had gone. A Los Angeles magazine had sent me to a nudist camp for a weekend to write about it. And to this day, and this is like 15 years later, I'm still on their mailing list. So I get invited to naked Super Bowl parties, naked ski trips.
Wait a minute. People ski naked?
According to the literature. Read the literature.
As long as you don't fall, it's okay.
I don't want to read the literature.
Okay. And there's naked cruises. So when we got onto the cruise ship, I went, okay. Let's use that. Okay.
Now, do you go to any of these events?
No, not one.
He says.
Not one.
He says for public consumption.
So do we know how Donald Trump feels about his inclusion in this book?
No, but if he's listening, we'd love to hear from Mr. Trump.
You also, you mentioned Brian Williams, although he has no right to complain. He's just doing his job here. But you also have Prius, Chuck E. Cheese, Amway, Mary Kay. I hope you got some products out of it.
Well, except that the way we mention them, I think we're more likely to get lawsuits, particularly in suggesting that Chuck E. Cheese may be the secret headquarters of a major international terrorism ring. I think they might not look at that as great product placement.
So these are just brands that you find intrinsically funny?
You know something? We needed something to come along at certain points. We went, okay, let's do, Mary Kay Cosmetics here. You know, it was like that. You were the one who came up with Chuck E. Cheese, right?
Yeah. So I'll be honest. Can I say this? I assume they're not a sponsor. I've always hated the whole Chuck E. Cheese experience. So I thought, wouldn't it be cool if the guy inside the Chuck E. Cheese costume, the giant mouse, he literally looks more like a rat, let's be honest. Run around. Wouldn't it be great if that guy were actually a terrorist? And not just any terrorist, but a really major, important one. Who would ever think to look for Chuck E.
No, it would be a, really a good disguise.
Yeah,
absolutely. But when he's when I opened up once again the email and I'm reading, and I go, oh. Chuck E. Cheese. Oh, man. I had to lie down after that one. Before.
Well, I understand that the movie rights have already been sold. I'm not sure that any of those products are going to want to buy any placement. Can I assume that Steve Carell is going to play Philip?
Yes. Yes. Universal got the rights, and with Steve Carell's company, would be producing the movie, and with Steve attached to play Philip.
And what about you writing the script?
The two of us are writing the script. We're in the middle of the outline as we speak.
So this has to be a big-budget film because you'll have to shoot in New York, Cuba, Somalia, China.
One of the things they're doing in these script-writing processes is figuring out how they're going to actually deal with all that.
Yeah, every phone call we've had so far, it's been about, all right, look, this is like an $800 million movie at the moment, okay? How do we pare it down?
You have a submarine in here.
And Charo, you think she's free?
Oh, no, she doesn't come cheap, by the way. So, no, part of our job is to what stays, what goes, and how can we replace certain things.
And you'd have to get permission to go to Guantanamo to shoot there.
You know, it's interesting. As a writer, it's so much fun because we can write anything we want and let others say, no.
And let me just say, if our government decides to allow us to film this in Guantanamo, I'm going to renounce my American citizenship. That's all I have to say about that.
Well, I get the feeling there were certain political ideas that you were trying to include here. I read somewhere that you had to take out the chapter that took place in Hogwarts. Were you threatened with a suit?
Yeah. The original, I can't remember the whole title, the original was Twilight, a Harry Potter novel by John Grisham featuring Stephen King. We had a title that we thought would be marketable, but apparently there were legal issues.
Do you both enjoy collaborating? Dave, I mentioned that this isn't your first collaboration. You did a series of books that were prequels to the Peter Pan story.
Yeah, I did those with Ridley Pearson, and what it was different is in that case, Ridley always had an idea what the plot should be, so I didn't have to worry that much about that. And that when I partnered with Alan, I thought, well, he'll take over for Ridley and he'll have some idea what the plot would be. And that was just a huge mistake on my part.
This is the first time I hear that. Okay. This might have been a discussion we should have had about a year ago.
Earlier on. Yeah.
Well, you collaborated with Steve Martin on the Oscars one year, didn't you?
No, I never wrote for the Oscars for Steve, but that was Dave.
Oh, Dave, okay.
But I've collaborated, started with Gilda Radner back when I was at Saturday Night Live, and then Gary Shandling and Billy Crystal. And I like collaborating because, you know, sitting by yourself is and trying to be funny is sort of an unnatural act.
It does help when you're working with people of that quality.
Absolutely.
So how did you wind up working with Dave?
You know something? I believe in giving back. Okay, so what I did was I reached down and go, all right, look at him. He looks sad. I'll help him.
Poor guy.
But I really ruled out the clothing optional part of the collaboration process. I just want to stress that.
Now, of course, you can't hear the other person laugh when you're sending things through email. And part of the collaborating process on a Saturday Night Live type show would be
absolutely
a can you top this?
Right, and it's more communal and it becomes social. This as social as we got were the two times we had dinner. I think what happened was writing to make the other person laugh. Now, that's not really collaborative, as we're talking about these other cases, but at the same time, there's a built-in audience that's going to look at it and react to it immediately, and that had a value to it.
Well, what I get from what you say about your two meetings, you remember the wine a lot better than any of the conversations.
Oh, yeah.
Alan drinks
whining a lot. Yeah.
Alan drinks cosmopolitans. That's all I have to say.
You know, it takes a certain guy to be able to pull it off, and here I am.
Dave Barry and Alan Zweibel will be speaking with Susie Essman tonight at 7 o'clock at the Union Square Barnes & Noble store. Their collaboration called Lunatics is published by Putnam, and it has been my great pleasure to have them both return to our show as guests.
Thank you for having us.